Hello, everybody. All right. The keynote was that good, was it? Okay. How was it? I didn't see the keynote. I was spending hours preparing this session for you guys. No, just kidding. So my name is Corey Sanders, and I am about to give you a wonderful, wonderful 75 minutes talking about app modernization. I'm going to walk you through the process of taking an app that you've got, being able to move it into the cloud, migrating it as sort of painless as possible, and then modernizing. How do you convert aspects of it to containers? How do you start adding additional capabilities on top using things like serverless, and be able to take the full advantage of the cloud as part of the process? So I'm very excited to be here. I'm really excited to walk you guys through this. A bunch of demos, a bunch of things to show you. So let's get rolling. The one thing I'd like to start off with, though, is I'd like to start off with just a personal point about myself. And so I'm going to tell you what my favorite color is. It's purple. So it's not red. I don't like red. But I am wearing red today. I'm excited about this. But I've got my snazzy shoes. Maybe many of you couldn't see my shoes, so that joke didn't get as many laughs as I thought. So I'll do this here. Thank you. That's not an easy stretch. All right, here we go. Enough nonsense. Let's start. So let me start a little bit about, why does this even matter? Like, why do you even care about moving to the cloud? Like, who cares? Why do you keep bugging me about this, Corey? It's really not about the cloud. It's really about the changes that you're trying to make to your environment, to your business, to your products. It's about this fancy term, digital transformation. It's about changing how you engage your customers, changing how you're thinking about your products differently, how you can support the things that your customers want to do in a much faster, more agile way, compete against others in your industry that may be doing this already. And then how are you making sure that you're reducing your costs? Everything can be done cheaper, for the most part. How are you making sure that you're optimizing? How are you making sure you're empowering your teams, your company, your peers, to be able to be the best that they can be, to focus on the business that you're in, so that you're not focusing so much on just running the infrastructure? And that's really, when you think of the cloud, it's not about the cloud, it's about what the cloud enables for you. And that's hopefully what we'll be able to walk through a little bit today. Now, when you look at sort of this progression across sort of all of the aspects that are really important to you in the business, the application that you're running, one is, of course, agility, speed, time to market. How do you get things out as fast as possible? How do you get things into your customers' hands, whether those customers be external or internal? How do you get those updates as fast as possible, continuously, in a safe way? Right? So that's very, very important. And that's really, when you look at some of the product aspects of the platform, and that's really what I'm going to focus on today, they're really focused on giving you that ability to be fast, to be agile, to make very, very quick changes. That's really where the sort of container movement came from, and also where a lot of the serverless movement has come from, is all around that point on agility. Certainly cost. Cost is a big factor. How are you saving costs? How are you reducing costs? And this is, again, container, serverless. All those aspects are about using just the compute you need, using no more and paying for no more. And that's very, very important. And it allows you also to experiment more. When you're using just the compute you need, whether they be VMs that you're spinning up for just an hour to try something, or whether it be containers on the other end or serverless, you're running them for tiny amounts of time, much less than you would if you were running this on your own infrastructure. It allows you to try some things as well. And then, of course, simplification. This is a really important aspect as well. How are you taking your environment, how are you taking the things you're building, you're managing day in and day out, and making them easier, simpler? And I'm going to walk you through all of that today. So I like to use this picture for how the maturity through this overall cloud story works. And I'm going to use this as the backdrop here for the entire session. One, you start with existing apps on premises. And I'm going to reiterate that the cloud is really just a means to an end, right? But that first step, lift and shift, this is about getting your infrastructure into Azure, into cloud infrastructure. That brings with it a set of agility, right? You can spin things up quickly and spin things down. But it also allows you to open up the rest of the maturity model. So getting your VMs in there, while the cost impact is relatively small compared to the rest, making sure your VMs are there so you can start adding the other things like serverless and containerizing and so on It's a very important first step, and so I'm going to touch upon it briefly. But I'm going to focus more, frankly, in my demos on cloud optimizing, which is really just containerizing. That's kind of the way I'm using that term here today. And then app modernization, which is really where you start seeing things like serverless capabilities, functions, events, and so on. And I'll talk a little bit about that. Now, I've got this progression here. Green lines mean minimal code changes. Purple lines mean relatively big code changes and sort of this progression. But there's really no rules here, just to be clear. There are no guidelines or strict expectations that I have of you to come back and tell me how you walk through each step. I don't really care, right? I think that the goal here is that you're taking advantage of the capabilities as far to the right as you can, and as is business valuable to you, right? And that's a decision you'll have to make. But you can really skip steps. You can go straight from on-prem to rewrite your full app, right? I do know folks who have done that. It can be challenging, but I do see that. You can skip steps, go straight to containerization, and so on. So, you know, don't get caught up in this is the flow, but this is the going from left to right is sort of a mechanism I see from a lot of customers. And so let me actually dig into a little bit of the details here on what that first step looks like, what that movement from on-prem into lift and shift looks like, and some of the tooling that we've got to support that. So this is the term lift and shift. It really is a very good descriptive term, except sort of shifting. I don't know what the shift is. But you're taking your app, and you're effectively taking it as a VM, and you're moving it to run on infrastructure in the cloud. Now, there's some clever things that you can do here that aren't purely just infrastructure. You can take advantage of some of the managed services here straight away, right? So you can go straight into things on Azure, things like managed instances with SQL. And I'm actually going to show you how to take advantage of Postgres or MySQL and use managed platforms as part of this lift and shift. So you get a little bit of that managed platform, but without having to do a lot of code rewrite. So you're taking your solution you've got, you're taking your VMs that you're running, even bare metal that you're running, and you're able to sort of move this straight into the cloud, get that level of agility. But this is certainly a smaller cost benefit and a smaller agility benefit than some of the modernization steps. So it comes with pros and cons. You're not re-architecting things. For the most part, things just work. There's always those caveats and those networking things you gotta kind of work through. But for the most part, things work. It's the least effort. But you are definitely getting the least value of the cloud. And so this is a good first step, but for many solutions, it shouldn't be the last step. And so one of the benefits here that you get, obviously you get that agility, but you also get the global coverage. So suddenly, your app can deploy now anywhere, right, in these 50 blue dots. And so there are actually servers behind these blue dots. They're very small servers. But you can deploy in any of these 50 locations and get that global benefit. You also can get some benefit across a reliability perspective. So you can get a benefit here when you're deploying in Azure. We do offer actually the only single instance SLA. So you can bring those single instance VMs and still have some confidence that this service is going to keep you up and running, all the way out to the 4.9s SLA that we offer with availability zones, which we recently launched. But then a lot of focus again on those region coverage, that ability to do failover between region. And this is where I think there's even some unique value even just in the lift and shift step. So let me show you a little picture here. This is what France looks like. And so if you look at France, we've got basically two regions in France. We've got France Central and we've got France South. And you can see they're very far away, that the distance between them is very far away. From a DR perspective, presumably a big storm shouldn't hit both of them, right? There shouldn't be a natural disaster that hits both of them. It's quite a large area. France is a big country. And so deploying in both gives you a sense of DR, protection, confidence, right? You're not going to go down because of some bad weather anomaly. But they're also too far away for synchronous replication. So if you're doing something like a SQL Server or Postgres or MySQL, what have you, being able to do synchronous between them is it's too far, right? It's just the distance is too much. The latency will be too high. You don't want to do that. And so this is where the combination of zones plus region become really powerful. So you can see the zone is sort of the zoom in on France Central. And you can see the distance here. It's hard to see sort of the gauge here. It's about 5 miles between AZ2 and AZ3 here, or about 7 kilometers. It is France, so it's 7 kilometers. And then between sort of, it is anywhere else in the world but the US, kilometers, seven there. And then between there and what we're seeing here in AZ1, XZ3, excuse me, is a little bit further, right? So that's about 20, 30 kilometers there. And so this is close enough for synchronous. And so the combination of these two, we think, is very valuable for both the combined HA solution that gives you four nines up in the zone location and then the DR location into the other spot in France. And so this is really, when you look at the vision of what we've got with DR, with zones, the combination of these two is really the way we're planning to move forward in a lot of the countries that we've got. And again, the nice thing here, no data is leaving the country, right? And so with a lot of these countries, there's rules, regulations, expectations around data proximity remaining locale in that country, and this enables that. And so you get that benefit, again, just with the lift and shift model. And so I have an example of one company here who's done quite a bit of lift and shift and actually taken advantage of our Azure Site Recovery and Migration services to be able to do this in a very, very easy way. So let me show you what they've done.
Allscripts was founded in 1986. We provide healthcare solutions to 180,000 physicians in 2,700 hospitals, about 13,000 post-acute facilities. We're a company of mergers. As we progress into the international market space, we simply don't have existing data centers in those regions. Being able to provide access to data centers worldwide, as well as the various technology sets to allow us to grow as a technology company, was the primary driver for us to head to Azure.
We had one rather large acquisition. It was close to 1,000 VMs. Even within 3 weeks, we were able to install a system, test failovers for our critical systems, determine which systems were or were not viable for moving, and then do the actual migration. Azure Site Recovery will install agents on your various systems, and not just Windows systems. We were also looking at CentOS and Red Hat. It would basically collect data on those systems as it runs, so we would understand what our future costs would be. And if there was any issue with those machines, we still had the old ones intact that we could resynchronize and bring across if we needed to.
We lift and shift from our existing data centers into Azure. At that point, we begin to refactor the code to become more native into Azure and take full advantage of the technologies available to us. The very wide and broad set of capabilities within Azure, whether it be IaaS or PaaS or Azure SQL, Logic Apps, Azure Functions, provides us the ability to match the technology to the problem we're trying to solve. Hybrid use benefit is very important to us for controlling our costs for our long-running 24/7, 365 applications. Through the use of the hybrid benefit, we'll be able to reduce our overall costs by up to 82%.
The impact of Allscripts moving to Azure has been pretty significant, anywhere from the way we develop our products to the financial side of things. We've accomplished quite a bit in Azure over the last couple of years, but there's way more we could be doing, you know, and I'm very excited, as is the rest of the company, to see where the rest will take us.
Very cool. So with there, I wanted to actually stop and show a quick demo here of some of this technology. Now, the demo I'm going to show you is actually fairly new technology. This is something that's not broadly available just yet. And what's exciting about this is, you know, some of the services that the gentleman mentioned and we've talked about is migration, right? Being able to take virtual machines, take physical machines, move them into Azure infrastructure seamlessly, right? And a lot of that support, as mentioned, Windows and Linux machines natively, but then also SQL Server has been very easy to move into a managed SQL environment. Well, what's great, and what I'm about to show you, is we now have support and are planning to release very soon broadly support for being able to migrate Postgres and MySQL into managed Postgres and MySQL services running in Azure. And so this allows, again, that same power of database migration as part of the database migration service, but into managed Postgres and managed MySQL, which is super cool. And so here you can see, you know, I've actually got deployed here a DMS, a database migration service instance. And so a few examples that I've got here in this environment, you can see I've got, let me zoom in here. You can see I've got both a MySQL to MySQL, and then I've got some Oracle to SQL-based solutions, right? So we can enable that as well. But then here's the one that I want to show you, which is actually Postgres. And so this goes from Postgres VMs running in your on-premises environment and allows you to migrate them into a managed Postgres service in Azure, thus reducing your cost, reducing your maintenance, et cetera, while still, of course, continuing to run your app using Postgres. And so just to kind of show you a little bit of what this looks like, I've set this up here. To kind of show you just a little bit of sort of what sort of this migration looks like. And so what I've got here is, this is a, let's see here. Oop, remember my password here. Okay, I remembered it. But I could not talk while I was remembering. So anyway, so what we've got here, guys, is we've actually running a set of orders. Okay, and so the reason why I wanted to show you this is a database running on premises. Okay, this is a database that I've got running, and I'm creating orders. So really, the way to think about this is data's going in, right? It's going in, and it's continuously going in. What's great about this, and just to kind of show you that data's going in, I've actually got another one over here that's querying the orders. Okay, and so let me show you this one. Okay. And so this one's actually querying the orders, and so you can see here, let it query that. So now it's got up to 103 here, and this one's up to 104, so it's about caught up, right? So let me zoom in here and you can see. So this is something that's creating data, and this is basically querying it. Again, all this is running on premises as part of this environment. So let me actually show you what that looks like here. And so here, if I take this as my site here that's running and sort of reading these orders. Let me actually refresh it here and just show you. So here you can see up to 109. So these orders are creating and going and going and going. And you see it's localhost. Now here's what's great. So I can do a very simple, and I just want to make sure I copy, oops, make sure I copy here the right string to connect to here. And so I can do a very simple cutover now of this environment. And so if I go here, and now what I'm going to do is I'm going to cut this over into the managed environment here in the cloud. And so this is a Postgres database running here in Azure, right? So this is a managed Postgres database running in Azure that I'm doing this cutover to. And so for my user here, I've got username and password filled in. Hit connect. And you can see here it's at to 117. So this is now running here in public Azure using our managed Postgres service, and it's already caught up to the data that was being written on premises. So that is how fast and easy that type of migration will be. So you've got an app running, you can make this switch over, and your data is just moving within seconds. I'm up and running, and I've got the data fully migrated, already replicated, that was being written on premises right into that managed environment in Azure. So super simple to do that type of migration. Just another aspect of lift and shift that should just make that entire flow and that entire process incredibly easy. All right. So that's kind of the lift and shift story. Let me move on to some of perhaps more of the interesting areas around optimization and containerization. So now that you've got all your virtual machines, you've been able to migrate your databases into managed databases, your virtual machines are running in Azure VMs, now you're saying, well, what's my next step, okay? And this is really where you start cloud optimizing or containerizing. This is really a big step towards containerization. Now, the benefits of containerization are minimal code rewrite. You're able to take a lot of existing solutions, VM-based solutions, convert them to containers, run them in an orchestrator, and not necessarily have a huge amount of code change. So you can take advantage of containers, get that agility, get that very fast deployment time, try and optimize the amount of resources you're using, but again, without having to go do a huge amount of code rewrite. Now, it's still not as much benefit as you're going to see from serverless and some of those aspects as well, but you can still get a huge amount of benefit by just taking that step. It does require you to actually containerize, so there is a process here, and luckily there's some ways to do it in sort of an easy way. So what's nice about containers is you're going to see more and more platforms just support this, right? So containers are effectively the zip drive of the future, or of the now. I guess zip drive's kind of old, where it's effectively a way to carry code. It's a way to carry a package. And many of these services are just going to support it, right? Some of the services were built natively to run containers, but some things like web apps or batch have a lot of capabilities, but then can just run containers. And so containers become this standard format. You saw this in Satya's session yesterday. IoT Edge can just run containers. So we can run them in any one of these services. We can run them in the edge. They're just becoming that standard format. And so we do have native support in a lot of these services. Let me start off with a few. So ACI, this just recently went GA. Very, very exciting service. If you're brand new to containers and you sort of want to see what the hubbub's all about, this is a fantastic service to get started because it's a simple command that you spin up. You get a single container. You have no infrastructure to manage. You have no orchestrator to manage. You don't even need to know what an orchestrator is. You can just get containers from us, just like you used to get VMs from us. But now you can get these containers from us, and we'll spin them up, and we'll deploy them, and we'll take care of that. And so it makes it very easy to spin up containers very, very fast, too. So this is the fastest way to get a container in the public cloud. So within seconds, you can get this up and running. And we do charge per second. So you make a mistake. You pay very little. You can pay down to, again, very, very small amounts just to get these things up and running. So it's a great, great opportunity to both learn, but then also a great scale-out opportunity. Right? So it allows you to extend existing services, which I'll show you, to be able to get very, very fast container-based deployments on top of existing platforms. And so the scenarios that we see this being used for, one, no containers, no servers have to be managed at all. And there aren't even any servers that you care about. And so they effectively are serverless containers. You can manage these completely on demand. So it gives you incredibly fast and agile deployment of containers, up and down really, really fast. And they are secure, right? So you can deploy these, and you get this level of confidence that this is running in a secure way without having any cluster being created or anything of this nature. You just get this up and running, and you go. And so this is, we are seeing this being used for batch-based processing. We're seeing this used for fast scale up and scale down. And of course, for any people starting with containers, especially particularly familiar on the Linux side, because it does have a very native Linux feel to it in the way that it deploys and is managed. And so when you start looking at this, again, no infrastructure to manage, fast start and stop, fast scale without VM startup. Now you may be saying, well, what's the difference between this and something like Kubernetes, which has an orchestrator, you know, tell me why I would use one versus the other. So that's got very fast scale up. When you look at orchestrators, and like Kubernetes here, or even Service Fabric, you have a lot more control over what you're doing. You can control what places where, you can control the separation or the HA of your containers. You can make sure that these two containers are going to always be deployed together. Right, so you can control that type of proximity. This type of control and placement algorithms that you may want to do with an orchestrator, especially when you get more complex with your applications, you can't really do as much with ACI. And so this is where we actually do think there's a lot of benefit of bringing these two together. So let me actually just talk a little bit about what we've done here with Azure Kubernetes Service, which I think I have Azure Container Service here on the slide. Ignore that. It's Azure Kubernetes Service. Why would we spell container with a K? Anyway, this is a fully managed Kubernetes service. So as Scott mentioned here a little bit yesterday, auto-patching, auto-scaling, auto-updates, but it's the full Kubernetes ecosystem, so it's 100% upstream. This is what's super important. So Kubernetes tooling, if you're using kubectl to be able to, or kubectl, depending on how you say it, to be able to access this and manage this, those commands just work. It's the full upstream experience. You've got the versioning controls that you would expect, right? And so it's fully portable, and this is really an important aspect. So one of the biggest reasons I've seen Kubernetes pick up a lot of steam is this portability aspect. You can deploy here on Azure. If you decide tomorrow you want to deploy somewhere else, great. You can. You don't have to change your app. You don't have to change even your operations. And so the benefit of this is we're creating a managed environment, which means you don't have to manage the control plane or the instances managing it, but it's still fully compatible and fully portable. Right, so you can still decide, okay, I'm going to go develop on this today, maybe tomorrow I won't. And of course, amazing integration with our dev tooling, which again, you saw on stage with Scott. I'm going to show you a little bit more here even today. But amazing integration with our tooling and makes it incredibly easy and an end-to-end experience that's just really fantastic. So huge, huge benefit there. And I mentioned and promised bringing these two together. So nodeless or serverless Kubernetes is the combination of Azure Kubernetes Service and ACI. So when you bring these two together and you've got effectively this control plane and you've got the application architect here on the left, and normally you would end up deploying into VMs, You deploy your pods into VMs, and those pods end up being the containers that you're launching, right? So if your app consists of a set of containers that you've deployed and you want to span it across four VMs, you use this control plane, again, a managed control plane, so you've got no infrastructure there, but then you're deploying into these VMs. And because you want to do co-location or you want to do specific HA placement, you want to use our VMs as part of our managed service. But then maybe you get a lot of traffic. Maybe you suddenly get a burst. And now, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? This is where the power of the combined AKS with ACI comes in, because now you can take advantage of our serverless containers to extend and still just talk to Kubernetes. So you're still talking the Kubernetes endpoint, but then you're telling it you want our serverless ACI instances instead. So don't spin up another VM right now. Give me the containers in a second mode, but again, using my same Kubernetes command. So still portable, can still move to other clouds, but now you get instantaneous containers as part of your Kubernetes management environment. And so the combination of these two, incredibly powerful to be able to bring these two together and really give you a serverless Kubernetes, a nodeless Kubernetes, without breaking portability of the upstream components. So it's really, really powerful. And this is all using a capability we call the virtual kubelet, which is a great name. And it's fully open source, actually, so it enables you to actually do this across any cloud environment as well to be able to, that's got a service like ACI. So super cool and powerful. But this virtual kubelet isn't sort of where we end on a lot of the open source work. We have a lot of open source work that we bring into the Kubernetes community with work around Draft for Kubernetes deployment. Helm is a package manager, Brigade, event-driven scripting, and of course, Kashi for a visualization of Brigade. All of these are open source solutions that we've basically effectively given to the community to help make Kubernetes easier and simpler to use. I'd recommend you go play with some of these. They all can be very fun and very easy to use. And many of them are integrated, again, with our dev tooling, right? So this is, as part of our dev tooling, you can take advantage of many of these services and be able to deploy against them. And so this is, again, a big part of our focus is just making Kubernetes great and easy to use. Let me change gears just a little bit. So that's the Kubernetes side. Service Fabric, a service that we built internally many years ago, actually pre-containers, to be able to run our platform. So a lot of our platform today in Azure is built on top of Service Fabric. And the way that we built Service Fabric was focused on microservices. And so like I said, it was before containers. It was all based on effectively partitioning both Windows and Linux to be able to offer microservice-based solutions. And it enables a lifecycle around that. It enables you to manage the lifecycle, manage the updating of Service Fabric, and enable very, very easy and agile-based PaaS services on top of these instances. It's great. It can deploy on Azure Stack. It can deploy on-premises, even other clouds, right? And so in some ways, this is certainly supportive of containers and can do orchestration of containers, but the real value is higher up. The real value is more focused on the understanding of microservices and microservices health and how to go deploy and manage that into a single application environment. And I will show this for you in a demo. And so one of the nice things about Service Fabric is it's very focused on being able to build once and run everywhere. And so with Service Fabric, we have the support for standalone, so you can run, again, this on-premises. We have dedicated clusters, very similar to what I showed you with Kubernetes. But then the latest that we are just launching this week, actually, and enabling this for customers is what we're calling Service Fabric Mesh. And this is a fully managed Service Fabric. So this is effectively, you know, the value that I talked about was that, yes, it can do orchestration, but the real value is the programming model and the application model. And that's what Service Fabric Mesh is offering. Less focused on the container side or the container orchestration side, and more focusing on the programming model, the layer above. You still use containers to deploy, but it's less about the placement of those containers and more about the app itself. And so this is a really big step for us because it does take away all of the management of the infrastructure underneath and leaves you just with the Service Fabric programming model on top. It's something that we've had customers asking for a very long time, and it's very exciting to sort of see this come to life. And so this, again, offers this fully managed microservice environment, focused development environment, managed infrastructure, and makes it incredibly easy to scale and deploy while using, again, this Service Fabric application model. Now, I've talked a lot about Kubernetes, I've talked a lot about Service Fabric, I've talked a lot about ECI. It's also important to call out that we have a lot of partner solutions too. And these partner solutions have been fantastic. They've been really exciting. They all have different, unique benefits that they're offering customers. And we're super excited to be able to partner with each one of them in solutions and deployments, in dev tooling integration, and so on. One that we just announced this morning, actually, at the Red Hat conference this morning, announcing support for a fully managed OpenShift platform on Azure. So that announcement just came out this morning. So another example of deep partnership that we've got with partner solutions to enable, again, this full breadth. Because for a lot of customers, there's different reasons why you target different platforms for different services. And so enabling the best of all of these is very, very critical to making sure that we're supporting you in what you need. And then, as mentioned, all of this comes together with our dev tooling. And I'm going to show you this here right now, but the integration of Docker into our dev tooling makes it so easy. It makes it so easy to take advantage of Docker in a simple and a quick way. And some of the examples that you saw here on stage just yesterday morning with Donovan, being able to take advantage of CI/CD pipelines, being able to take advantage of VSCS to go deploy that whole thing, the integration with Kubernetes to be able to manage that environment, all this, again, deeply integrated with our dev tooling. And today I'm going to show you the integration with Service Fabric and being able to containerize and deploy directly in that. And so let me actually show you what the app that I'm gonna build here and kind of walk you through. So it's, again, a very simple web front end service tier, data tier. The back end is a SQL VM. And what I want to do first, using Visual Studio, I'm going to now convert this into a containerized app. And then I'm going to enable it to deploy on top of Service Fabric. And then show you some of the benefits of that first step on Service Fabric, including very fast agility, very fast deployment, right? Show you some of the benefits live. And that will be, again, this first step to cloud optimizing. So I'm assuming I've already lifted and shifted, so all that migration I just showed you, it's now done, right? So everything's up and running. And so now I'm gonna show you the containerization step using the code that I've got. So let me actually zoom in here and show you that. All right, so let me go over here and actually show you the app that I've got. Okay, so I like to keep the theme with the smart hotel. And so what I've got here is I've got an app. Again, it's a very simple web app that I've got here, front end, middle tier. It's a service that's effectively offering me to go study who's checked in and who's not, right? So it basically gives me the details of who's checked in, and I can zoom in. And so all this is, of course, stored in a database and a fairly simple solution. Now, this is just running, as I sort of mentioned, this is just running in an IaaS environment. Oh, I may have to multi-factor auth here. This is security in action, everyone. So let's just enjoy this for a moment. Okay. I brought my cell phone on stage just in case, because this sometimes, there it is. Verify my identity. This was not a part of the demo, just to be clear, but it's pretty sweet that it just works. I hope. All right, there we go. It did. It did work. All right. So what I'm going to be showing you now that I'm securely connected. What I'm showing you here is this is just an IaaS deployment, right? This is just VMs, this is just SQL, this is, you know, there's nothing sort of special here running. I have only a small amount of credits left. You think they'd give me more. And so here I've got this web app and I'm running, right? Okay, great. So let me actually go to the code. So as I mentioned, it's just web WCF-based solution, right? It's just a web front end and a services here, back end here. You can see the full app is here and deployed. And so this is just running kind of what you'd expect. Nothing sort of special here, but here's what's great. So I decide, yep, I'm going to go ahead and I am going to containerize this guy. And so let's go here. And right here you can see Docker support for Service Fabric. Just hit add. And this will add this to my environment here. Let me actually go back because I want to add both. So let me zoom, get this down here. Oops, there we go. And then let's see, I added that to the web one. So now let me go add it here. Okay. And so now I've added it to both. And so the first thing you'll see here, is Dockerfile. So this is, again, I don't really need to know or care, but it auto-generates the Dockerfile for me, right? So this is the file that's basically telling me how those containers are going to be built when I deploy them. So you can see it's pulling from an ASP.NET container, basically a standard container. So it's been able to deduce that that's the container that's needed. And then it's setting this up and setting up my environment here. And so you can see if I click in here to service into the service manifest here, you can see it's got sort of all the details that I would expect. I want to go down here to the application manifest. And you can see here some of the parameters that I don't have to change, but I can. Things like whether I want to run with more instances. So this will launch with just one instance of each, but I can launch it with more. But then also isolation. So I can decide what type of container deployment do I want to deploy inside Service Fabric. Do I want fully Hyper-V-based isolation? Or do I want to take advantage of a lot more tight packing, right, and really take advantage of the resources below, which means those containers trust each other, right? I can basically decide, do they trust each other or not as part of this. And so very, very simple, and you can see easily created, easily. And then I can even go here and hit publish. And then straight from here, I can go and publish straight into a Service Fabric cluster running in the cloud. And so it's even easier once it loads them. There they are. And so you can see here I've got a set of Service Fabric clusters I can pick. And so if I wanted to deploy to this smart hotel Service Fabric cluster, I pick a registry that I've got. So I've got a private registry already set up here for me. Right, and so this will allow me to store my container and deploy it from there. And then I can go ahead and hit publish. I'm not going to do that right now. But I'm not going to save those changes. But you can see just how fast and simple I've spun up a Service Fabric cluster. I've now containerized this app with just a few clicks, and that's going to launch. And just that simple, let me kind of show you. This is actually just the exact application, so it should look very similar. I guess different. Maybe it's pulling from a different database, or maybe it's been updated. You can see here, this is the one that's running here for my container-based solution. And then this one was running the original IaaS solution. And so the exact same thing running in both. And so this is the Service Fabric view of what's running. So I've spun this up. I've got five nodes. As I mentioned, this is running on Azure Virtual Machines. I've got one app deployed, right? And so you can see here the two parts of the deployment. Here's the web front end, right? So you can see here the web front end as part of this. And then I've got the WCF portion of the app here, okay? And so as part of this, again, one instance each, but they're each deployed and they're running and they're taking the traffic that I need. Now, if I say, I may need a little bit more capacity. So let me actually show you this view. So these are my five nodes. You can see they're relatively empty, right? I've got a lot of room here and a lot of opportunity to grow. So if I go here and actually say, and this is where the agility comes in, guys. If I go here and say two, okay, and then let me go to the second one and say two, okay. And so now watching here, we got, it's just launched. So now I got another one, right? So now it's taking more traffic on my front end, and now hopefully the second one comes through, and I can take more traffic. Oh, there it went. I can take more traffic on my back end, right? So this is really when people say agile containers, that's what it means, right? So now I've got this solution running, which is Service Fabric. Same exact experiences can be done on something like Kubernetes, and you can then just scale as needed. And because those nodes are there, and it's going to go find the optimal place, you can see it didn't stack on any node. It used the other nodes that were available to try and spread it out. Once those fill and there's one across each, it'll start going up to two and three until it runs out of capacity, right? And so, and then you have to add another VM as part of it. But this allows you to take advantage of that optimization and agility while still, again, no code was written, right? Other than the right click and containerize. For a lot of your applications, it's just that simple to be able to containerize your solution and go. Okay. All right. So, the last step, which is the probably the biggest one of the set, which is modernization. So now you've got things containerized. Now you're saying, I want to hear about all that fun, new, cool stuff, serverless, functions, etc. How do I get there? And this does require more code work, right? This does require you to develop more. It requires you to, and that's great, right? I think that's obviously, that's what this room is looking for. But it does require changes to an existing app, typically, or adding to an existing app. It's a combination of services that you're going to see. It's a combination of data services and compute services that we're going to walk through, and I'm going to show you a lot of the real power that we've got here. So first, just kind of a view of what this means and sort of how this all fits in. As you make this progression here from left to right, from on-premises to IaaS, that lift and shift motion, then PaaS and serverless here on the right are really allowing you, again, more agility, easier deployment, easier management, and lower cost. And you can see serverless is what's all the way to the far right. Now, you may be saying, well, I've heard this term serverless, but what is this? Like, what does this mean to me? Why do I care about serverless? Well, I'm really glad you asked me that, because I happened to make a slide about it. Serverless is really about building apps faster. It's about managing your apps versus your servers. And it's kind of an obvious name. You can reduce your DevOps and the costs associated with DevOps and get much faster time to market. And the reason for this, again, is because there's no infrastructure to manage. And in many cases, like functions and logic apps, they're fully event-driven. So this means they sit idle until you tell them to do something, which, of course, reduces your cost and also reduces a lot of the risk of code going bad or code going stale, or if it runs for too long, do you have memory leaks? These sorts of things are a thing of the past with serverless, right? You don't need code to run any longer than you need it, and you don't need to pay anyone to run your code any longer than you need it. And that's what's super valuable about serverless, and that's why typically events are associated with serverless, because event-driven is what makes serverless so powerful. There are a lot of serverless aspects that don't necessarily require events to be a part of it, but typically events are a part of the concoction, the serverless concoction. So that's why I love to talk about EventGrid at this point. So EventGrid is a fairly new service on the platform that allows fully managed event routing. So when you think of serverless, and I'll talk about functions and logic apps and so on, these guys are running some code, right? They're sitting there and they're waiting to have their code run. The key thing about why eventing needed to change to make serverless work is because the whole principle of serverless is that these things are not doing anything until they need to run, which means polling can't happen, right? This concept of I'm polling is actually a thing of the past. It is not a construct of the serverless world. Everything needs to be event-driven and push. Nothing should be pull. And this is why EventGrid, which is why we created EventGrid, because a polling-based messaging system will not work in serverless, because you have to wake up and listen, versus a push is really the key, and that's what EventGrid does. It's basically a fully managed event routing push system. It has a lot of cool things about it. Because it's a push system, maybe your app happens to be down for a moment when it does try to push into it. It gives 24 hours before it gives up, so it's going to keep pushing you until you listen. And even after that, it can do dead lettering, so you can put it off into storage and say, I missed this event, I better go look at why, what happened, right? No one picked this one up, even though I pushed it. It's connected with a lot of our services, but it also can be used with external services too, and that's what's so cool about it. And the announcement that we made on Friday, which I think is perhaps one of the coolest announcements, blogs that I think I've written, was about cloud events. So this is a new open source standard as part of CNCF, so it's basically an open standard body. Folks like Oracle, IBM, Google, AWS are all involved, that is an event standard, which means you're not locked into any cloud or any eventing solution, that we now support natively with EventGrid. So EventGrid can now publish in this standard and listen in this standard, which means you can have things running in AWS and use EventGrid and then go off to GCP if you want to, right? So this ability to have eventing truly be a global phenomenon and take advantage of the services that you want with this open source standard cloud events is now a reality. And it's available today. So we launched it on Friday with the announcement of the V0.1 version of cloud events. So this is very, very exciting to see and to give you a sort of a view of what this all means coming together. Here you can see, from our perspective, the cloud event story, lots of events coming in. Services that we've built, so whether it be things like media services or blobs, service bus, these can create events in EventGrid. You can also have custom events. So your apps can create events with us, no problem. So you run an app, you want to create an event, do it. We can take cloud events, we can also publish in cloud events, and then on the right side, functions, logic apps, listening to these events, being the push of those events, and being able to react and run code. We also have the ability to, of course, take those and buffer more events out, things like an event hub, which is actually storing it more of a streaming way. And then, of course, you can even do custom out as well. So you can run other code, you can go fire Lambda, you can do whatever you want. And this cloud event support, very, very exciting. I've copied, I believe this is the entire standard here. So it's a pretty simple standard, a pretty simple format. But very, very exciting, normalize this across environments. I think eventing is gonna be one of the most portable, capable services and solutions that exist. And I think it's gonna open the door on what serverless can really be. Imagine writing an IoT device, and you're writing some code on it, and you're stuck picking which cloud provider you're gonna write your events for, right? That's nonsense. So this now enables you to not care. You write it to cloud events, and everyone, presumably, will be able to go listen and act on it. All right, so let me talk a little bit about the services now, because these services are super cool. So first, let me start with Azure Functions. So Azure Functions is our code-based serverless product. So this is on-demand serverless code. It allows you to develop, debug, deploy directly in Visual Studio, which I'm going to show you. You can do Visual Studio or Visual Studio for Mac, all of this local. And this is one of the hardest parts that we've actually seen with serverless, is not how easy it is to make agile-based changes, but how easy it is to make mistakes. It's one of these, the how fast you can go update also means how fast you can go ruin your application. It's very, very easy to go make mistakes because it's hard to debug. And this is where some of the integration with Visual Studio is so powerful that I'm going to show you. And then, of course, CI/CD support as well as part of VSTS, being able to update these directly and deploy changes as part of them. And then, of course, the aspect of functions that I don't have here but is super powerful is you can put them in a container and run them anywhere. So it's open source solution. So Azure Functions is open source, can run in a container, and can run anywhere. Right? And so that's why it's a big part of our IoT Edge strategy. You drop it in a container, you run it, and suddenly these IoT devices can run those same functions that you just debugged on your Visual Studio device on your PC. So super powerful and something that we're seeing a huge amount of growth on in the platform. Then let me add on top of that Logic Apps. So Logic Apps offers the ability to do on-demand serverless workflows. And so what this allows you to do is it allows you to connect with many, many different services. And you saw Jeff Holland actually demo this during the keynote yesterday. So it is serverless, just like functions, but it's more focused, again, on workflow versus code, right? So you're using this, you're connecting different aspects of your solution, you're making decisions based on the outcomes of those solutions, and you're firing off other events, other actions based on that. And again, also deeply integrated with Visual Studio tooling. And I like to put in cognitive services here in the mix because for many of these serverless solutions that we're talking about, many of them end up involving cognitive services somewhere in the flow, right? Because a lot of the things, when you start looking at, great, I lifted and shifted, then I containerized, now I want to go do some modernization, a lot of that is additive capabilities. So I've got my app, it's running, but I want to go run some analysis on the types of information that's coming in. I want to go do sentiment analysis on that. I want to go study the pictures that are coming in through our service. That can be additive modernization without touching your existing app. And that's why we see a huge amount of event-based functions, logic apps with cognitive services, things like vision, speech, language, knowledge, search, all being additive services to the ones being deployed. And what's so cool about this is you can make these custom learned. So they're not just based on some set of knowledge we have. They're based on a set of custom training that you give it. And so a good example of this, obviously you saw the picture training as part of the keynote. The other one that I like to talk about is that we worked with a gaming company, and they had a unique language, and there maybe not a lot of people have this same problem that needs to be solved, but they basically created a language. I think it was Klingon that they were using. I don't know if that's copyrighted. Anyway, and so they needed this to be able to be cognitive about Klingon, and so they needed it to learn Klingon. And so they basically trained the service to learn this language that doesn't exist and make it so it was possible to use that as part of both the language, and then I believe they even got some of the speech working as well, which is kind of interesting. And so this is a good aspect, maybe a good example of sort of how this can all come together and all the pieces come together. And then sort of the last point here, when I talk about serverless, it's, I have to talk about data. And when you think about the data model, you start thinking about the serverless pieces coming together with things like functions, things like logic apps, cognitive services being used, and then the data model underneath, things like Cassandra or Mongo being written underneath with Cosmos DB, and you truly have a portable and global serverless application. And this is really, when I think of the future of what applications start looking like, this is really where I actually see that picture taking shape. So if you take a look at these gigantic logos, they looked a lot smaller on my laptop. See these gigantic logos taking over the world. This view of Cosmos DB being this backend, this data backend that's global, NoSQL, multi-master writes, multiple models that are open source portable models like Cassandra or Mongo. This being the backend, simple click and replicate. Then using these serverless services on top, whether it be container-based management with something like Kubernetes and AKS, whether it be functions, whether it be service fabric, this layering, I believe, is the way applications will be written moving forward. Because you've got stateless solutions on top with this global data model underneath. It makes it incredibly easy to update and manage. And it just creates a much simpler global application story with, again, out any servers that you have to manage. And of course, paying exactly for what you're using in each one of these cases. So let me actually show you one example of a customer who's done some pretty amazing work with a bunch of these services. So you'll hear a bunch of the names of these services in this video. Pretty exciting, actually, to see some of the work that they're doing. So let me play this right now.
There's over 3.5 million trucks on the road every day. Customers want to know where their freight is in real time. We've built this business on a mainframe, but we have reached the limit of that capability.
We are migrating to Azure to handle 18 billion integration points and 8 billion transactions over the next 3 to 5 years. We are moving from 2,100 applications to one platform.
We have Linux, Windows, and Java that we needed to migrate. We didn't have to re-architect those applications in order to move them to the cloud. The hybrid cloud enabled us to move the workloads that made sense and continue to operate our business on-prem.
We're using Visual Studio Team Services to integrate with our current Jenkins platform. We use it to build out our containers and deploy directly into the Kubernetes cluster. You just click a button in Azure and it's there. Kubernetes has enabled us to create new features quickly and integrate those with our production revenue systems.
Azure gave us the ability to modernize and lift and shift our systems, but do it simultaneously so that we could grow as our revenue grew.
Being able to shift our workloads from CapEx to OpEx was a primary advantage for moving to Azure.
With the platform as a service, I never fall behind on the patches or the security. I'll be getting upgraded along with the Microsoft technology.
Microsoft didn't ask us to bend to their vision of a cloud.
This is not a cookie cutter approach. J.B. Hunt is not an old trucking company.
It's a digital company, one that really leverages information and data to make decisions every day. We've just tapped the potential of Azure.
And we are disrupting the industry.
Super cool. I sometimes wish maybe for like a day I could swap jobs and just drive a truck. That'd be fun, I think. Dangerous for all of you, I think, just to be clear. Yeah, I think it's probably safer for me to be in my current job. All right, so that's super cool, super powerful, and you see some of the benefits of being able to take advantage of a lot of these services. So we come back now, and I pull all those pieces together into this demo environment. So we've already containerized this thing. It's running on top of Service Fabric clusters as a part of those container solutions. Now I'm going to go crazy. I'm going to add Twitter. I want to be able to go track sentiment from customers. So I'm adding value to my solution. I'm taking that Twitter. I'm basically doing this initial assessment, putting it into Cosmos DB so I can track those tweets. I'm then going to go do a sentiment analysis using an Azure function. And I'm going to go actually debug that function. And then I need to add this to a new stateless service That's a Service Fabric service that's going to be offering this up as an endpoint for my web front end to put this into my app. So that's going to be the next demo. So it's pretty much that's it. That's all I've got left. I'm just going to get demo for the rest of the time. All right. So I want to start here with Logic Apps. Okay, and so you see here I've got Logic Apps deployed, and what I'm going to do here is I'm going to go into the designer. And so I want to show you what this is going to do. So here you can see the designer. This is super, super powerful. If you haven't played in this designer, I highly recommend it here. But this is starting here by basically doing an integration with Twitter. Okay, and so it's basically saying, hey, whenever a smart hotel is in the tweet text, I'm going to go take some action against it. Right, and it gives me the frequency and so on, and it's using this connection here. So I'm actually going to go ahead. I've already got a tweet here ready to go, so Smart Hotel. So I'm going to go ahead and tweet this just to get this up and running. So now what's it going to do? Well, first, because I'm in test mode, it's also nice try if any of you started tweeting this already. Because this is in test mode, it's going to actually validate that this is coming from me. Right, so I don't want to go do this work against a whole bunch of other tweets, and so it's going to validate here. I will remove this once I actually am done here testing this. And then you can see here it's going to drop this into Cosmos DB. And so very simple. I mean, this is a trivial amount of code that I've written here to go make this work. And so you can see here it's going to go take in the information that's coming from Twitter, the location, the tweet text, the username, and it's going to drop this into DocumentDB that in sort of this data format that now, again, I can go study it, I can go analyze it, and so on. And so what this does, what's great about Logic Apps here is I can go in and I can actually see when this is fired and when this is triggered. Okay. And so here you can see this is fired here. Let's see, is this morning? There you go. So this actually fired this morning. It was triggered, and I can go in and actually see the status of what happened and sort of the output that happened here, right? And so that's great. So it looks like it worked. Let me actually come back here. Great. Okay, so now let's go over to my Cosmos DB solution. And so here, Cosmos DB, let me actually show you this here. Let's get this off. I don't want that there. Okay. So here you can see Cosmos DB. I've got this database, right? And it's running, and it's where I'm replicating things. And just to show you sort of an example of how easy this is, I clicked here into data replication, and now I can just, within seconds, I can decide where in the world I want to go replicate my data. So if I go in and say, you know what, I want this to also go to, let's say, South India, I can do that, I can hit save, and this will immediately start replicating my data. It's literally that simple to be able to get global-based data deployment. I'm not going to do that right now, though. I'm going to actually go discard that. Let's go over to data, my Data Explorer. Okay, and so I got to go see the data that's come through here. And so I'm building this app now. I've got now the Logic app up and running. Here I can see. Let's see if I can see this. Okay, great. So it looks like I've got this here. Let's zoom down here. Okay, and so you can see here, Smart Hotel is pretty good, right? So that was the tweet that I just tweeted. So Logic Apps picked it up, dropped it in here. It's got this deployment, and it's ready to go. Okay, so that was step one. Logic Apps listening to Twitter, dropping it into Cosmos DB. If I want to go replicate Cosmos DB globally, great. Now, what's great about this is that there's also many other things that you can do as part of this, right? And so for this solution, I actually have a much more complex one that I could do. I could go in and say, great, I got a tweet posted. Let's say people put a picture in. I can even go in and I can extract media, drop it into a storage account, and even take action on that. And so by dropping it into a storage account, I can then go in and actually run an event grid-based solution. So if I drop back home here and say, let's open up this storage account, so every time people put a picture in, I can go in here and you can see events. And I want to set this up. And so here's what's great. And you saw this a little bit in slides this morning, but let me show you this in action here. If I go to events here under storage, and let's say people are putting in videos, I hit create here. And this is now just creating an event grid pipeline for me. So I don't even know, I don't even care that event grid is being used here. But it wires me up, and I've already got my accounts already configured because I've used this before, and it wires me up. So here you can see when an event occurs. But this is an event grid event that I didn't actually have to create, right? I just hit go. And so this is sort of where you see a lot of the power of serverless becoming a reality. where you don't actually have to go think, right? You can basically just use, and it's just enabled a lot of power here. And so you can see here, this is basically taking this event, it's gonna run a condition, and then it's gonna basically use some of the sentiment capabilities to be able to run this video and create basically a full segmentation of that video for me to use. Okay, so let me get back to the actual tweets that I've got here. So these tweets didn't have pictures, so it didn't go through that pipeline. The tweets that I've actually got here, one of the things that I've noticed is there, I've got now a function that I'm running that is having a problem, okay? This function seems to be failing. It seems to be truncating a bunch of my tweets, okay? This function is built as part of my sentiment analysis, and I actually happen to have the code here, right here in Visual Studio. So this is my function, and this is sort of Visual Studio enabling me to go do this. You can see it's actually, if I actually go here to, local settings here, you can see this is pulling from that same Cosmos DB that I was just on, right? So it's pulling and pulling from that, right? So that's what the function's doing. It's looking for updates there, okay? And so if I go back here, if I go back here to the actual code, you can see this is where it's basically creating the list of tweets and doing some analysis. So I'm gonna go ahead and add a breakpoint here. So let's do a breakpoint here, okay? And then I'm gonna do a breakpoint inside here because this is where we truncate, and so I kinda wanna see what's going on here. Okay, so that's great. So now if I hit go, here's what's happening. I'm now building this function locally, and I'm spinning it up locally with ASCII art. And what I'm doing here, the value of this is that this doesn't need to run in the cloud. This is allowing me to run it locally. It's allowing me to debug it locally. And actually, there were already things in that Cosmos DB, so it's already up and running and it already hit my breakpoint. It went faster, I had more things to say, but now here we are. So this hit my breakpoint, so you can see here, there's a couple of tweets in there that are, let me go down to documents here and show you. So this, if you look here at the tweets that we've got, there are a couple in there. And so, let's zoom this over here. Okay, great. And so, let me just play it through here and hit continue. And so now it looks like this one hit the breakpoint. So this one is truncating my tweet. And so if you see here, if I hover over this, the tweet text is very, very long. And so you can quickly see what the bug is, presumably. That it looks like I put some code in here to validate that the tweet isn't more than 140 characters, which used to be the rules of Twitter, no longer is. So this tweet is longer than 140 characters, it's getting truncated. So you see here now, this giving me this warning, I can now see what the tweet text is, I can understand that it's 219 as the length, and it's truncating it, and that's why I've got my problem here, okay? And so then the second one that comes through, I actually don't have as much of a problem. And so this is because this one's actually the one that that I just tweeted, right? And that one's gonna go through just fine. And so if I just kind of continue through that, we'll not hit the second breakpoint. And so you can see here's the output of the function running. And so you can see here, this one is saying it got cut off. And so this one ended up being more than 140 characters. And so that's no good. And then this one is the one that I tweeted through. And so that one looks like it's working well. And look, it also gives me that sentiment score of very high. And so that worked very well, right? And so right here, I can basically say, great, that's fantastic. Let me stop debugging and I can fix my code. And so I think it's 240 now, right? 280, 240? Does anyone know? What's the maximum Twitter? No? 280, thank you. So like any good developer, I'll just update that to 280 and be done. Don't forget the comments. All right. And so with that, I can go and build that. I can go deploy that. So you see, I've done this local debugging. I've done this local analysis of the code. And it's integrated, again, with that entire environment. And so now I can go back and I can publish all of that. If I go in here and actually change, let me go back here. And so this was all a dev environment. And here's what's also great about this. If I go back to my Logic app, this is all going to my dev environment. It's going to my dev Cosmos DB. If I want to go in and I want to change that and I want to say, you know what, actually, I'm now going to go make this go back to my production site. So you can see it's right now it's setting debug site. I want to go back to prod site. Just like that now, this is back up and running in full production mode, right? And so if I go back in and say, let's see here, my hotel is much better now, okay? If I do that, And so what this is gonna now do is it's basically gonna go and deploy that, and it's gonna run through the system, and the function now has been fixed and deployed, and it'll allow that all to work. Okay, the last step of this app modernization. So now I've gone through, I've added logic apps to go pull from Twitter. I've done sentiment analysis using a function. I'm now using CosmosDB, which can have global replication for that data storage of what those tweets are looking like. Now I need a part of my service to change so that I can pull from CosmosDB with the sentiment score already done and add that into my website, okay? And so what's beautiful, and the reason why doing this originally with Service Fabric enables a lot more capability, now I've got this app running, and this is the containerized app, but no additional services on top. And now what I can do is I can say, great, now I have a new service I need to add. Okay, and so here I can go in, and I can basically say new Service Fabric service. This is a Service Fabric environment here. And so this allows me to go in and pick and deploy exactly what additional service I want. And so this case, because it's just reading from CosmosDB and creating basically a web API that's going to be read by the website, I'm just going to make it a stateless.NET Core here. Let me just make it. I'm going to make it my sentiment analysis service. Okay. And so let me just create that. And I want an API, right? So it's just creating an API that's going to expose it to the rest part of my service. And just like that, I've got this entire environment. I can now right-click and deploy and publish this. And now I'm running in that same Service Fabric environment with this additional service deployed. And so, but this is just super simple because this is just looks and feels and touches just like you'd expect an ASP.NET web API to look, right? So if I go in here and I go into my values controller, here you can see I've got what you'd expect, just the normal API controls that I can go type in and leverage, right? And so I actually happen to have done this already. Okay, and so let me zoom over here to a finished product. Oops, I'm clicking the wrong one. Finished product here. And so this is, again, that web API. And so you can see this is calling now that DocumentDB repository. It's pulling from it. It's creating and returning the sentiment analysis and what that tweet looks like that can then be used as part of my service. And so again, a right-click publish. This app is up and running. It's running in that Service Fabric cluster. And away I go. And so let me see here. Let me actually show the finished. That's just a dancing box here. Look at that. Let's just watch that for a minute. No, just kidding. All right. Let me go back here to the finished app. And so here I've got my finished app. And so let me actually refresh it here. And so I've got sentiments up here. It's sort of a new section that I've got. Okay, and so if I click here, you'll see, and there's the one that just piped through, right? So this one now just came through. Get that out of there. This one just piped through and shows here the sentiment analysis of that I tweeted myself. And so here you can see this is the tweet and some of the other tweets that have gone through. And again, this is the service that's been created. So now this is running a new PaaS-based service running on top of Service Fabric, pulling from CosmosDB data that was put there by sentiment analysis from functions after using logic apps to pull from Twitter. So this is really taking that modernization sort of a much deeper step forward and allows you to put all those pieces together in sort of a very, very coherent way. All right, let me slide back here and finish up with the slides. And so this is the app. This is the app that I just showed you, the app that we modernized. Fairly quick to go do. Obviously, this is a very, very trivial example, but you can sort of see how this can come about, how you can take advantage of these services to add value to the apps that you've already got, taking advantage of containerization and app modernization as part of it. And so when you look at this whole motion, this whole cloud maturity motion from left to right, starting from existing apps all the way to app modernized, as I said, you can go in any which way you want, right? You can find the right path, you can find the right progression, but this really is the overall motion that you've got. It is the modernization journey that you're going to want to take with many, if not all, of your apps. And so start thinking about how you're going to get there. And that's going to be small steps or big steps, completely up to you, but the services are there for you and should be fairly easy for you to go take advantage of. Now, if you were wondering where this code was, we do have this code available online, so you can go take a look at what we've done here. I talked a little bit about the migrate to Azure capabilities, and of course, getting started in a very easy way. And so the last thing I'm gonna leave you with is actually one more customer video, just to show you a customer that's, again, taken huge advantage of both the migration and that modernization capabilities.
Chevron's been in business for over 100 years. We do business in over 30 countries. We've always seen technology as a differentiator for our business. What's different with cloud is we can deliver business value at a speed never achieved before. We can manage greater volumes of data. We believe cloud actually makes us more secure. We can actually patch our infrastructure faster if it's cloud infrastructure. Chevron has an application portfolio of approximately 6,000 applications. We are interested in moving as many of those to the cloud as we can.
We started with Best Basic, very quickly moved on to the IaaS Basic, and now we continue to enhance these automated pipelines.
Through automation, we get better reliability, the ability to manage our data across multiple platforms, move it on-prem and off-prem, using modern architectures.
We were taking a two-pronged approach on how we do this so that we could migrate as fast as we can and target our modernization efforts on our legacy systems. Azure Site Recovery is allowing us to do the lift and shift component of our migration. It really allows us to automate our disaster recovery as well as our production environments over into Azure.
One of the reasons we focused on PaaS first is we can drop some of those infrastructure costs to help fund the migration. Microsoft has been very flexible in terms of finding contract ways or service offerings to make that cost effective for us.
The experience working on the cloud migration, I would call it liberating.
We certainly know that other companies can bring technology, but they don't bring the resources to help you apply it. Microsoft understands enterprise better than anyone, and they've been true partners with us on this journey. We're pretty excited about where we are, but we're most excited about what we can do tomorrow.
And I'm very excited about what you guys can all do with these services and solutions I just showed you. So with that, thank you so much. I hope you enjoy the rest of Build, and please enjoy it. I don't know, I didn't have anything else. Thank you.